Chapter 12. Everything changed the next day, when at mid-morning a warning whistle from the tower announced the arrival of Tyndall's detachment. Tyndall was at the head of the column, of course, riding a midnight black charger and wearing a dashing green mantle over his armour. Except for the mage blade on his back and the lack of helmet, he looked all the world like a handsome knight-errant. That, Rondal discovered all too quickly, was readily apparent to Lady Arcella, too. "About time you got here," Rondo said casually as his fellow dismounted. "I expected you at breakfast." "The goblins made us breakfast," Tyndall retorted. "A patrol stumbled on us last night and clearly wasn't expecting to." 10 of them," he said dismissively. "It was hardly a fight. As soon as they crossed my wards, I was awake. Didn't even disturb the horses," he said proudly. "That's the first sign of goblin activity we've seen," Rondal said, shaking his head. "Figures you'd bring trouble along with you?" "Bring it? I dispensed with it," Tyndall countered. "None of them will be reporting our whereabouts. We hid the bodies well." "Hopefully they won't be missed," Rondal sighed. "I'd hate to have to leave this place just as we're getting settled." "So show me around this magnificent manor," Tyndall said, just a shade sarcastically, "and introduce me to the lady in charge." As Arcella was near to hand, that wasn't hard. But the moment Rondal did so, he regretted it. Suddenly, Rondal stopped being the focus of Arcella's attention. As the ancients ordered the new men to their billets and led their horses to the abandoned stables, Rondal realized that Lady Arcella could not take her eyes off his fellow apprentice. He even tried testing her focus by asking her where the tanning shed was, which elicited a vague and dismissive response. Arcella was suddenly very formal and polite, and made a show of welcoming Sir Tyndall and his brave troopers to Maramore. Rondal recalled that when she had first met him, she had almost shot him. "So why don't you give me a tour?" Tyndall asked, as her welcome ended. "As I'm going to be staying here, getting to know my hostess is demanded by the laws of hospitality. And I would be remiss in my duties as a lady if I failed to do so," Arcella said, beaming. She slid her arm into Tyndall's offered elbow, and without a word or even a look back at him, she left the yard and went inside. "Orders, Captain?" asked a familiar voice, breaking Rondal's brooding. He looked up, and into the face of his squadmate, Walvan.
"Walvan!" he burst. "What are you doing here?"
"I told you I was headed for the front," he reminded Rondal after they had embraced. "I got in with a mercenary outfit just in time for it to be hired permanently by the Crown. I'm a corporal in the 3rd Royal Commando now."
"3rd Royal Commando?" Rondal asked, confused.
"It's supposed to be an elite unit. All the Royal Commando units are. But right now it's mostly just the best of the mercenaries coming upriver to Barabel. The first two are deployed in other advanced regions near the front. Having completed the mysteries got me in. One nasty battle in Gilmora got me promoted."
"But the cavalry?"
asked Rondal skeptically. "You always struck me as more of an infantryman. Or artillery."
"Versatility," chuckled his squadmate. "That's supposed to be our watchword. Part ranger, part knight, part soldier, part spy. And the commando is a mobile unit, in theory. So that's why I'm mounted. I hadn't planned that, but they had a spot available for a corporal, and I wasn't going to turn down the pay increase just because my arse hurts when I ride."
"I don't blame you," nodded Rondal. "You know, I don't even know if I'm being paid," he grumbled.
"So what is the local situation like?" Walvan asked, returning to business.
"I like this place. Remote. If we hadn't known where to turn, we might have missed it."
"Not with Sir Haystack with you," Rondal reminded him. "But that is one reason I like it. You have that long stretch of nowhere to get through before you get here. And now that the entire region is depopulated, we can let it grow up over the road if we need to conceal ourselves."
"Which we will," Walvan agreed. "There are apparently one or two manors and castles that have been turned into cantonments in this barony. We're to find them and scout them. That patrol this morning told us we're close."
"We set out tomorrow," Rondal promised.
He glanced suddenly up at the tower above, where he heard the sound of Lady Arcella laughing, too hard, at something witty Sir Tyndall had said.
"And let's hope there are some goblins around. I suddenly feel like stabbing someone." The next morning, Rondal awoke before dawn and detailed a 5-man squad to accompany him, including Walven and the Rangers. Lady Arcella had stayed up late into the evening around the fire in the Great Hall, meeting and laughing and drinking with the new arrivals, especially Sir Tyndall. He found her barely awake, stirring porridge in the kitchen around dawn, and she was able to provide him vague directions to Kettrell Manor, only 8 miles away. Faroon was just to the north of that, she said, but she wasn't certain. Rondal had his maps from the Castellan's room, so he wasn't operating blindly, but he had anticipated Arcella being more help than she was. She didn't know much at all about either place, or what he could expect. Worse, she treated him cordially, but distantly. The warmth he'd come to expect from her wasn't there, and she barely paid attention to him. She did ask him to keep an eye open for bacon and lard while he was scouting, as they had not been included in the inventory in the wagons. He gruffly took his leave with Walven and the men. He didn't say when he would be back. She did not ask. He felt better as soon as they passed beyond Maramore village and into open country. They rode along the deserted road, almost daring an attack. Frequent stops to scry, particularly at crossroads, told Rondal there was little chance of that, but he almost hoped he'd overlooked a goblin. The countryside was ruined. The cottages were either burnt or broken or both. Unlike the round huts the peasants in Sevendor lived in, these were more rough, poled sheds of wattle and daub. It didn't take much to break the walls. None were occupied. It looked as if a giant burglar had broken them open, searching for coins. The fields were unploughed since last season, and the crops either growing wild or absent. As they came to a hamlet 4 miles from Maramore, they saw one of the Gavanni's grisly tributes, a man and a woman flayed alive and displayed in an obscene position in the ruins of the town's shrine. Swearing angrily, Rondal used the power of his witchstone to incinerate the unfortunate couple's corpses, giving their deaths at least a modicum of dignity.
"Ish, his tits, that's awful,"
Walven swore. "They do that constantly," Rondal complained, "just to taunt and terrify us. We do it back to them, too. After battle, we spike their heads, but we usually burn the bodies, not entertain ourselves with them." "This goblin king is a nasty fellow," Walven said appraisingly. "He's not a goblin king," Rondal said, shaking his head. "He's an unearthly, undead, magical construct. He's not even alive. All he wants is us dead. And things like this," he said, gesturing to the smouldering corpses now mercifully at rest, "delight him." "How old were they?" Walven asked, looking away. "You can't really tell when you find them in that state, but..." "Oh," Rondal swallowed. "Probably 6, 7 weeks.
"A while, then," Walven nodded.
"Good." They turned left at the next crossroad, a ghost village called Recoy on the maps, and proceeded down a narrow dirt track that led through a swampy area before spreading out into what once had been rich cotton fields. By noon they were riding through Kettrell village, which had once enjoyed a sophisticated prosperity due to its use as a market town. Now the houses lining the high street were empty or gutted, the smell of ashes still lingering in the air. Rondal stopped to scry while the rangers scouted ahead, and when he pronounced the manor clear, they rode cautiously through its twisted gates. The folk of Kettrell Manor had put up a fight, those who had been left at the grisly end. There were huge bales of last year's cotton piled in a barricade in front of the manor house, peppered with Gavanni darts and javelins, and black with dried blood. One had been hurled through the upper story of the manor, creating a large crater in the masonry and exposing the interior. 2 rotting horse carcasses and piles of debris from the hastily looted hall littered the once tidy yard. In the worsening heat, the stench was overwhelming, particularly when you accounted for the defenders who had been honored for their heroics by being flung from the second story with their intestines nailed to the wall. Their bodies were still where they had suffered their excruciating deaths, their extended guts covered with flies. In the end, it was easy to see who the victors had been. Crude Gavanni symbols had been painted in blood across the face of the manor. Carrion birds still sported in the horrific decorations. Apart from a few stray goats gone feral, there was little sign of life here. "Search it for food and whatever might be helpful," Rondal ordered, his stomach in knots, "and weapons.
Anything we can scavenge and keep out of goblin hands is a good thing. Their efforts yielded a few sacks of rye flour, some preserves in earthenware, a few pounds of salt and a sack of maize. They found a sheaf of spears and a battle axe that had been an heirloom, but little else of value. There were other good supplies left in the stable, and Walven had them gathered and protected. He was about to cut the offending entrails off of the manor house, but Rondel stopped him. Leave them. That way whatever goblin patrol happens by might not realize we've been here. And those weapons, hide them in the stable. We need to start caching weapons when we can't carry them off. Why not just destroy them? Asked Walven, curious. Because it's likely that we'll have a human insurgency here, even if it's just irregulars, if the goblins are planning on staying. It would be nice to be able to direct them to weapons and not have to worry about supplying them. Once they had packed all they could carry, they set out for the second manor, Faerûn. Faerûn was smaller, but better fortified than Ketral. It had a small, sturdy keep within its walls, almost invisible behind the tall, narrow manor, and though the gate was open, it was undamaged. After scrying it thoroughly, Rondel led his men inside. The whole countryside smelled of death and decay now, he reflected, but the difference from the stench of Ketral was striking. It wasn't quite as bad here. A grain farm, not a cotton plantation, Faerûn was nonetheless every bit as prosperous as Ketral had been. The village outside the walls would have been charming, had it not been deserted. The goblins had been here, it seemed, but had found no one when they arrived. Faerûn seemed to have been abandoned in anticipation of the attack, and abandoned in an orderly fashion. When the goblins arrived, Rondel reasoned, they did not find the humans they were hunting, so they moved on after a token looting. While the interior of Faerûn Hall had been trashed, it had not been destroyed. Better yet, the kitchens were still well stocked, even after the withdrawal, and there was both food and firewood. Rondel ordered two big slabs of bacon to be brought along, and selected some roots and a wheel of cheese before he ordered everything else loaded into the keep. So we have a place to retreat to if Manamor gets hit. Walven nodded. Exactly, he nodded, as they opened up the thick wooden door to the keep. This is the most secure place I've seen in Gilmore. It's intact. If well supplied, we could hold out for weeks in here. While no one comes to our rescue. Walven nodded. Well, maybe the goblins would get bored, suggested Rondel, as he sent a mage light ahead. Look, this place has weapons, he said, pointing to a rack of pikes and shields. It has water, it has food, and it has walls that are 2 bloody feet thick. Even a troll would have to take his time with that, and if we could strengthen them with spells, they'd be good enough to keep them busy a long time. You're such an optimist, Striker, Walven chuckled. At least it doesn't smell of death in here. No, agreed Rondel. Just chickens. Someone left that window unshuttered and a couple of hens got in. Lovely. Oh, well, just leave them there. We'll enjoy the eggs. Darkness was still a few hours away when they quit Faerûn Hall, leaving behind a tidy amount of provisions and a possible second refuge. Rondel had even spellbound the door before they left to keep it that way. On the way back, he felt noticeably better, now that he and his men had an escape route. As comfortable as Madamore had been, it was disposable. No sign of refugees or insurgents yet, Walven pointed out as they recrossed a stream. Otherwise those manors would have been looted bare. I think the attacks came too quickly and were too thorough for anyone to just slink away undetected, especially once the goblins started hunting in earnest. From what Arcella has said, they were very thorough about it. Still, you'd expect to see someone. One girl. That's it. I expect there are some about. But if the Gavanni are using human confederates, I'm sure they don't want to assume that everyone over 6 feet tall is a good guy. Good point, conceded Walven. You're pretty good at this command thing. Don't spread that around, Rondel told him. It's a royal pain in the ass. They arrived back at Madamore Manor an hour shy of dusk. Rondel found the place bustling with activity as the new men settled in. Both towers sported sentries now, and Tyndall had spent the day improving the wards and other defences around the place, including repairing the great wooden gate. It was intact, with a guard behind it, when they arrived, to Rondel's pleasure. Tyndall was in the hall, and the evening meal was almost ready to be served. Rondal saw that Arcella had excused herself from cooking duty, as one of the drovers fancied himself an army cook, and was instead near to Tyndall's elbow at a table when he came in.
"Here's the bacon you requested, m'lady,"
Rondal said in a toneless voice as he flopped half a slab on the table in front of her. "Sir Tyndall, if you'll meet with me in the Castellan's room, I'll go over what we saw today." Tyndall looked up at him, clearly not eager to leave cup and fire for military intelligence, but the night mage knew his duty. He heaved a heavy sigh.
"All right, all right. My arse was just starting to heal after all that riding, but I suppose I can take a look."
Rondal led the way upstairs to the old Castellan Sola, stripping his armour off his body wearily as he did so.
"So what's the news? Any Gavanni?"
"No signs," admitted Rondal, "but they're out there. Both manors had been visited. Faroon was abandoned and might make a good refuge. Ketral tried to fight. It's ruined. No survivors."
"So much for my dreams of a native army to rally around me,"
grumbled Tyndall good-naturedly as he sat in one of the chairs, the same spot Arcella had sat that first night they had kissed.
"But no goblins. Don't you find that strange?"
"In a relaxing, soothing sort of way, yes," Rondal said, shrugging out of his hauberk. "But I take your meaning. Where are they, then?"
"They didn't head back to the Wilderlands," Tyndall agreed. "In fact, I checked in with Terlaman earlier, and he said that most of the traffic going north is human. In chains, but human."
"So where are they?" Rondal repeated, unrolling the parchment map he'd been using in addition to his mage maps. He drew a circle around Faroon and put an X through Ketral. He paused.
"Well, it only looks like there are 9 more manors in a 10-mile radius to check," he said in disbelief. "Lewin's stuff. That's a lot of people in one place."
"It's nothing like the Mindons," agreed Tyndall, helping himself to some wine from the bottle on the table. "In the Wilderlands, you could go 20 miles between settlements. In most of the Riverlands, you'd have 3 or 4 every 10 miles or so. But Gilmora was densely settled, thanks to the fertile soil. Easy to plough, mostly flat, rivers everywhere. The climate is warm enough for 3 crops a year in some places, and it takes a lot of people to produce cotton. Think who in you can feed a lot of people on beans, maize, and potatoes."
"That's a lot of people," agreed Rondal, still staring at the map.
"The villages we went through were big, bigger than those around Sevendor. In the Wilderlands, we'd call them towns, but now it's about empty.
So where did they all go?
Some fled south, or are castled, but the rest? How many went north into the Umbra?"
"Tens of thousands, at least," Tyndall said, taking a big sip of wine.
"Maybe 100,000? At least," nodded Rondal, imagining the horror of the long lines of Gilmoran peasants being escorted along the trade roads into the perilous north.
"I'd say closer to 2. The problem is, we have no way of knowing how many were killed, how many fled, and how many were taken, which is why they get brave, stupid young lads such as ourselves to go out and see,"
nodded Tyndall. "But it does answer the question, why Gilmora? It's the largest, most densely populated part of the duchies."
"The kingdom," Tyndall reminded him.
"If the dead god is pushing the horizon of the Umbra through sacrifice, then he just took a bumper crop. Processing," he said, wincing at the heartless term, "that many people, is going to take time and organization to process."
"You really have a sick way of thinking about things," Tyndall said admiringly.
Rondal ignored him. It was getting easier. "That's why they stopped their advance. Not because we were beating them. Not because we killed a dragon. They probably had already stopped by the time of the Battle of Cambrian Castle. They stopped because they simply didn't need to go on any longer. Their organizational structure was full."
"That's probably why they're using human confederates now, too," agreed Tyndall.
"Let's face it, as impressive as Sherul and his priests are, and as fierce as some of the Gavanni are, they aren't exactly masters of organization. They're operating mostly from a tribal culture, and they just don't think in those terms. Humans would, and we're terribly corruptible."
"That's a good point," admitted Rondal, thoughtfully.
"And just think of the looting possibilities.
You've seen how wealthy these Gilmoran aristocrats are. Goblins don't appreciate the really valuable stuff that's just sitting around unguarded now.
Oh, I've been thinking about it, nodded Tyndall with a grin. As I said, we're terribly corruptible.
It niggled at Rundle's nascent sense of honour that such looting was morally wrong at some level. But he had also learned in the mysteries that the fortunes of war were ephemeral, and a smart soldier knew when to take clear advantage. Looting might not be, strictly speaking, chivalrous, but it was part of the military economy, and most considered such gains as a sign of Duin's favour. Besides, he'd proven he wasn't above doing a little looting himself at Birchroot. So we understand their strategy. Now that we know their goals, the efficient processing of sacrificial victims. Disrupt that, and we disrupt the pursuit of their goal.
Reasoned like a general, nodded Tyndall,
and we also know what they'll be after in the next phase of the campaign. There's probably 500,000 extra people crammed into southern and eastern Gilmora, and that's before you get to the heart of the Riverlands. Now that they've set up their organization, they'll be able to process them a lot faster.
But they're protected, countered Rondell.
I admit, most of the castles in this part of Gilmora are built to impress, not to resist. But there are some tough ones in the south. That was the border between Castol and Alshar for a while, remember? Those are big castles, and the fortified towns down there are nothing to yawn about.
And they attract dragons, Rondell said.
Which are terribly hard to control and difficult to deploy, Tyndall pointed out, finishing his cup. Not to mention hard on the very thing they want to collect, people. If you want to harvest people, then why dash them to bits and scatter them when you can have them all contained?
Because you don't have adequate supply train for siege work, Rondell said.
You're thinking about this like a human, Tyndall said, frowning.
It's one of my strong points, Rondell shot back.
My point is, you're thinking in terms of human warfare, but humans don't use dragons, or trolls, to rip the gates off of castles. They built siege towers at Beauval, but they were crude. Crude enough so that a couple of spellmongers could knock them apart.
And they have magic, Rondell admitted. That adds an unpredictable element.
Thank the gods, nodded Tyndall. But that still doesn't mean they can besiege a castle successfully. Not one that is well defended and provisioned. Even with trolls, it would take a whole lot of them put together to take down a walled town.
So it remains an interesting question, dismissed Tyndall, but it doesn't answer the one we asked.
Where to next?
Rondell studied the map.
I'm thinking a little 3-day expedition up through Randia. It borders the Cotton Road. Heffany Castle is supposed to be a big one, and it's connected to 7 other domains by road. If I were a goblin bureaucrat, that's where I'd put my depot.
3 days, nodded Tyndall. 12 men. The rangers, maybe a squadron of cavalry.
Take Walven, Rondell recommended.
Tyndall shrugged. He had an ambivalent relationship with Rondell's former squadmate.
So who is leading? Tyndall asked.
You or me?
I figured since I went out this morning, you could take this one, suggested Rondell.
It was a perfectly reasonable suggestion. It was also, he knew in the back of his mind, a perfect way to get Tyndall out of the manor and away from Arcella for a few days.
You can keep contact mind to mind, and if anything goes amiss, we can come rescue you.
Tyndall snorted, as if that wasn't a realistic possibility.
I think I'll hit these 3 manors along the way, he said, tapping the map in a way that told Rondell he was committing it to a mage map. Lorwyn, Asgarl, and Heem. If possible, I'll scrounge a cache of provisions along the way to cover a potentially hasty retreat.
That sounds like a good plan, Rondell decided.
While you're gone, I'll continue to survey the local country and fortify this place. And I'm going to send a small party south along this road to find a good place where we can hide another cache, in case we have to retreat from here in a hurry, too. I like knowing which way is the best way out.
Whereas I like to know which way is the best way in, conceded Tyndall.
See, we can work well together.
If you mean you get into trouble and I get you out, I cannot disagree, Rondell said flatly.
Tyndall ignored the jab, and instead he clapped his fellow apprentice on the shoulder.
I'll save you some choice loot, too, he assured him.
Rondell was about to rebuke him for his arrogance,
but then he realized that he would be turning his nose up at Duin's blessing. That was asking for bad luck at best.
"I trust your judgment," Rundle said unconvincingly.
Tyndall announced the expedition at supper that evening, a roasted goat that had wandered too close to the range of the gatekeeper's arbalest. He announced the roster, gave orders, and outlined the itinerary for the mission. Rondol watched carefully as he delivered the orders. The men were unconcerned about it. They were just orders. But the look on Lady Arcella's face satisfied him. She looked stricken when she realized that Tyndall would be leaving Maramore. As soon as dinner was over, he watched her approach his rival and begin speaking in urgent tones. Rondol was considering casting a long ear spell when she suddenly left, mounting the stairs toward her chambers, looking back over her shoulder once before she hurried upstairs. Tyndall glanced over at Rundel and caught his eye.
"Relax," he told him, mind to mind. "She just wanted to be sure we took enough bandages and such. She's just trying to be helpful."
"I didn't say anything,"
Rundel returned sullenly.
"Your face did.
Like I said, relax. You've got 3 days with her.
Cozy."
Rondol didn't reply. Instead, he went to his own room after checking the guards and warding the manor for the night. There was just enough wine left to give him a taste for more. That was something he could request the expedition scavenge. The local vineyards produced a god's-awful sweet-sour vintage, he recalled from his time in Barrowbell, but the cotton lords were wealthy enough to keep good sellers from far-off lands. He reached out to Tyndall, mind to mind.
"Wine," he said as he made contact.
"What?
Wine,"
Rundle repeated. "While you're out skulking, find some damn decent wine." He paused.
"What are you doing?
You sound distracted."
"Oh, nothing."
From his mental tone, he sounded guilty.
"Wine. I got it."
"What's the problem?" Rundle demanded.
Arcella came to say goodbye to me. Sorry, I'll send her away."
Rundle's heart sank.
"No, don't bother,"
he said after a few moments of anguish. "She's the lady of the manor. She's entitled to demonstrate her affections toward anyone she likes. And that's you, apparently."
"I'm sorry,"
Tyndall repeated. He truly did sound sorry. That made it worse, somehow.
"Don't be."
"I'm getting used to it," Rundle said, doing his best to cloak his emotion.
"You know, it's not like I ask for it,"
Tyndall said defensively. "Sometimes it's a real pain in the arse."
"Yes.
You sound like you're suffering."
"She's just kissing me a little,"
Tyndall defended.
"It's almost sisterly."
"No, it's really not," Rundle replied, disgusted. "You enjoy yourself. I'm going to sleep. Don't wake me in the morning, I'm tired. And forget about the wine."
"Really? Are you sure?"
"Yeah. Bring me back some spirits instead." "That's the commander's prerogative," chuckled Tyndall. Rondo went to sleep eventually, but it was no respite from his cares. His dreams were filled with a nauseating combination of the horrors he'd witnessed and the women he had been interested in. At various points, wise-cracking goblins and sadistic ancients got involved, and when he awoke at mid-morning, he was covered in a sheen of sweat. It was still hot enough in the steamy cottonlands, even in the early autumn, but his sweat wasn't due to the heat. Blearily, he bathed his face in the basin and stumbled downstairs to the great hall, where two of his men were finishing their porridge. When he asked, he found out that Tyndall had departed at dawn, on schedule and in good order. The place was almost quiet without the extra men around. Rondal spent the day inspecting the walls and the stores, figuring out how long their supplies would last and how much more they would need. It was good, productive work. At midday, he sent 2 troopers out to scout the roads and villages along the southern road to ensure they were not leaving a foe behind them. Lady Arcella was nowhere to be seen. That afternoon, while he was staring at the map in his room again, Tyndall checked in.
"Well, scratch Lorwyn off the list, burned to the ground, along with the village and the mill. Caught a goblin scout, too. Shot him before he could get away."
"I'll inform the minstrels of your victory," Rondel replied dryly. "We also found the first survivors, a couple of peasants hiding in the bush. They told us about some resistance further up the road. Might be promising."
"Send them back our way," suggested Rondel, "assuming you think they're uncorrupted. They're starving and scared, but I used a truth-tell spell on them just to be sure. It's not impossible to lie under such a strong magical compulsion, but it would take great skill and effort. Then send them back. We can put spears in their hands for a few days, get them fed and prepare to send them south. That night, just as the cook was serving the last of the leftover goat, Rundel got another message. Remember that resistance the refugees were speaking of? We met them. It's more like a real insurgency.
Insurgents? Really? How? How many? Where?
We came across a large goblin patrol encamped in a village, about 20. So, of course, we had to attack. Just as we began, they got attacked from the other side by a band of irregulars. Turns out they're holed up in Asgol Hall, with some others. That's where we are now. We're the first sign of help they've seen in 6 weeks. They've escaped 2 slaving expeditions so far, attacked a couple of patrols when the opportunity was right, and they even freed a column they found lightly guarded. But they've been talking about moving locations, because they're starting to get noticed. I suggested they go to Maramore Manor to await a convoy south.
We don't have a convoy going south.
We will if we get a few dozen refugees together, reasoned Tyndall. But they've been a wealth of information about local activities. We might get a few of them to stay on as scouts, perhaps.
Are they armed?
Decently. Bows and spears and a few swords. Not much armor, but then they're insurgents, not infantry. We'll get them outfitted, those who want to enlist.
Any luck on those spirits?
He asked casually. Around this lot, not bloody likely. They look half-starved. They drank the place dry long ago. But they told me which way to approach Heem Manor, and where the next closest goblin cantonment is, and apparently Sire Wrath of Heem had a reputation as a drinking man, so that's encouraging. Rundel finally saw Lady Arcella when she came down to dinner later. She was wearing a somber green gown that didn't quite fit her anymore, and a stoic expression that put Rundel on his guard. She spoke rarely during the meal, and seemed subdued and withdrawn. Rundel was almost ready to go to speak to her, when she caught his eye and looked away guiltily. She knew. She knew he had feelings for her, he realized, and she'd chosen Tyndall over him. Her look told him everything. A surge of rage flirted with Rondell's mind, but he pushed it down, embracing a cool, logical approach to the problem instead. When your emotions raged out of control, Sire Kay had told them often enough, taking refuge in the cool, safe confines of duty and custom could spare you the poor consequences of rash action. And no initiate of the mysteries respected a commander who could not control his temper. That kind of man invited disaster in the field. So Rundel inquired from his men the state of the manor's defences and their supply, although he knew the tallies well by now, and he took a report from the 2 riders who'd returned at dusk from their errand. The roads had been empty, they said, and the villages deserted, but their scavenging had brought in a few sacks of oats overlooked in a barn. Lady Arcella retreated to her room the moment dinner was over. The next morning, the 2 refugees Tyndall had sent along arrived at the gates of Maramore. Rundel welcomed them cautiously, and after giving the men as much as they could eat from their meager stores, he listened to their tale. They were from a village in the north that had been among the first to be raided. They escaped and had travelled from one hamlet to another, avoiding goblin patrols and slaver crews by hiding. They'd fought when they had to, they admitted, but they'd never had proper training in arms, not even militia training. It wasn't encouraged in Gilmora, where peasant rebellions were uncommon but typically bloody. The time for such distinctions was over. Rundel ordered the 2 to report for elementary training on the morrow, then went to fill in the information he got from them on the abandoned manors and towns they'd been in. They looked frightened at the prospect, but as this was the first sign of organized human activity the 2 had seen in weeks, they agreed to do their part. Rundel was just rolling up the map when Tyndall contacted him again. Rundel, remember those insurgents? They're on their way, most of them. We're going to keep a half dozen with us as we scout, but in about 3-4 days, you can expect almost 2 dozen. We'll have to get more supplies, he said, after some calculations. Fast. That's your problem, Tyndall said. But here's a bit of bright news. You can tell Lady Arcella that one of the men from Maramore village was among the slaves that the insurgents freed. A lad named Alwer, former Haywood of Maramore. He's a good fighter, Tyndall praised. He's going to stay with us a while and help us with the scouting.
He was shocked to hear that our cellar survived.
I'll tell her, he promised.
Maybe delivering such news would get him some notice, Rondol reasoned. It was at least an excuse to compel her to speak to him. We're going to escort the insurgents to the crossroads before we split up, so add an extra day to our mission. I think it will be worth it, though. They seem pretty excited about showing us the camps around Hefany. Good luck. Let me know how it turns out. He was surprised by Lady Arcella's reaction to the news of fellow survivors, and of Alwa in particular. Instead of being pleased, she looked troubled, almost anguished. She asked several times if he was certain, and Rondol assured her that the message was clear. Again she disappeared into her chamber. Rondol was busy making preparations for the arrival of the refugees. He couldn't spare the time to seek her out and ask her about her strange behaviour. The issue of supply was becoming critical. With 20-odd new mouths to feed, they'd have to forage quickly. He sent out 3 2-man scouting missions of his remaining rangers to other villages and manors in the area, and prepared the great hall and the lower rooms of the towers as best he could. The next morning, he made a full report to Terlaman, mind to mind, and got encouragement for his works. He was watching the 2 new men go clumsily through the basic drill under the eyes of a watchful guard from the top of a tower when Lady Arcella appeared. She looked even more troubled than before, but more resolute.
Sir Rondol,
she began formally, I have been thinking about what you have said about survivors. I did not think that was possible, of course, but, well, there is one way in which it might be. When the attack came, there was a man, I think he was from the village, who was working with the goblins. He's the one who led them here, I think, and he pointed out where people were hiding. Rondol looked at her in surprise. A collaborator? She nodded. I only caught a few glimpses before I hid, but I can clearly recall that Alwa was the one who led them here and helped them capture everyone. Are you certain? He asked skeptically. Alwa of Maramore. He was the village's Hayward, she nodded. A man of devious nature, from what little I can recall. I would hesitate to trust him with anything. He was liberated from slavers, Rondol said calmly, his mind racing. Had Tyndall walked into a trap? Was he about to be betrayed? Then they betrayed him as much as he betrayed us, she said, her eyes narrowing. Would that he had died instead. Sir Tyndall sent word that he has been most helpful in scouting the region, Rondol said calmly.
He is with Sir Tyndall?
She asked, alarmed. Oh, Sir Rondol, you must send him a message at once. The man is not to be trusted, and if possible he should be... What? Do you not execute such traitors in wartime? She asked coolly. It is the custom, yes, he admitted. But,
Sir Rondol, I urge you to send word to poor Sir Tyndall and his brave men at once, she declared. I fear for his safety.
I will consider it, he promised. I don't want there to be any mistakes on this mission, and allowing a traitor in our midst would count as a big one. Thank you for your intelligence, Lady Arcella, he said gravely.
Thank you for your honourable service and loyalty, Sir Rondol, she said, bowing formally. I do hope we can avoid another tragedy. This war has given us too many as it is.
She turned to look at him plaintively. He felt himself start to move in her direction, but then his discipline intervened. He recalled how she had abandoned him the moment Tyndall appeared, and he stopped himself. She was expecting him to react favourably to her attention, he realised. He did not feel like giving her that satisfaction.
Of course, milady. Is there anything else? He asked stiffly.
Arcella looked at him, a hint of surprise on her face. She seemed confused for a moment, then withdrew.
Just look to the safety of your men, Sir Rondol, she said. I'm wary of the 2 vagabonds you've taken in as it is. I don't much like the look of them,
she added suspiciously. They are welcome here, Rondol said firmly. They are refugees. More, they're helping with chopping wood and keeping the horses, tasks my men would otherwise have to devote their time to, and they have, grudgingly, taken up arms in our defence. Their billeting is within our mission.
Just keep them away from my chambers, she said a bit haughtily. I don't trust peasants I don't know.
He agreed to keep an eye on them, and then left the tower. Something about Arcella's accusation bothered him, but he couldn't figure out what. But he had a duty to warn Tyndall.
He contacted him mind to mind immediately. "I told Arcella about your man from Manamore," he told him. "She was cool to the idea when I mentioned he might be coming back to the manor, and then today called him out as a collaborator. Is she sure? Alwer of Manamore? A former Hayward? She says so, but, well, I'm not going to hang a man without more proof than that. Just keep an eye on him. Has he shown any signs of treachery? Unless you count the breakfast he served this morning, no. He's been as stalwart as any of these lads. Good with a bow, too. But I'll watch him, and maybe ask him a few questions on the sly. You do that. I'm going to try to see what else Arcella knows. How goes the reconnoitre? Well, we've taken Heme Hall, and you will be happy to know that there are 3 bottles of very expensive brandy from Cormier living in my saddlebags. We had captured a wineskin, but I regret to inform you that it didn't survive the night. It didn't survive the night, you mean? All right, that is good news. No shortened hair is yet. Not yet, but soon, we hope. We're coming up on an encampment now. Good luck, and let me know if you get yourself killed. We're going to make a quick supply run, Rondell told his duty officers the next morning at breakfast. We need food, and we need it quick. We have people incoming in 2 or 3 days, and I don't want anyone to go hungry. The one place where we know there is a stash is at Faroon, and it's not that far away. We know it's probably still clear of goblins. So, we're going to take all 3 carts down the road, load them up with whatever we can carry back, and get it done by sundown. With that many more men, we should be able to do a more thorough job of foraging.
Looting, you mean?
Arcella said disapprovingly. The former owners are not around to compensate, Rondell reminded her. When civilians do it, it's looting. When military do it, it's foraging. And you'll get a first-hand look. You're going with us. Her eyes widened.
I am?
Yes. Your knowledge of the local country will be invaluable, and perhaps you can give us information on Faroon Hall we aren't aware of. You have been there, haven't you? She bit her lip.
Just the one time, for a dance.
I was in a carriage the whole way. I don't remember much beyond the food and the music. I wouldn't be much use. We'll just enjoy your company, then, Rondell said coolly. Arcella's jaw jutted out defiantly.
I believe I informed you I wish to stay,
and I regret to inform you that you are going, for military necessity, he returned. He couldn't believe she was getting so tense about a field trip.
I am indisposed,
she said, retreating behind a veil of femininity. You are going, he said in a tone that indicated he was confident of that. It surprised him that he was capable of it. Prepare yourself. We leave in an hour. Her jaw jutted out, but she gave no more argument. Instead, she switched tactics.
I cannot help but notice that no messenger has departed from here, she said even more coolly. Is it your intention to not warn Sir Tyndall of his danger?
Rondell smiled. Sir Tyndall is a big boy, my lady. I trust he can handle himself against a single Hayward.
A treacherous Hayward,
she reminded warningly. So noted, Rondell said. I shall have a horse saddled for you.
You,
she said, irritated.
Yes, milady,
Rondell asked innocently. She glared at him, but did not say anything else. An hour later, when the party was getting assembled in the yard, she did join them, wearing a travelling wimple and a mantle of grey. She had thrown it back defiantly over her shoulder, revealing a simple tunic and hose, with tall, high-heeled riding boots of rich brown leather. Her crossbow was slung over one shoulder, a long knife in her belt. Rondell didn't think a woman could look even more feminine when she was armed, but he suddenly found himself even more attracted to the girl as she strode boldly across the yard, a glare plastered on her face. She really was quite well-formed, he thought admirably. Then she stumbled, and some of the glamour was broken.
It's been a while. My boots don't quite fit anymore. I suppose I've grown,
she explained apologetically. But her tone reminded him that he was still upset with her over her fickle attentions. She tied 2 small bags on the back of the grey mare that had been saddled for her. She was a bit nervous around the beast, but Tyndall had chosen a well-tempered horse with calm demeanour for her, when Rondell had asked him his opinion mind to mind. The mare stood patiently while the girl mounted the saddle. Rondell had no idea how one could tell such a thing in a horse, but he was willing to concede his fellow's expertise.
Rondal left the manor with only a few men to guard it. Arcella looked at them skeptically as they left through the makeshift gate.
"Are you quite certain that they can keep out a horde of goblins?"
she asked, an urgent tone to her voice. "I'm quite certain that they couldn't, milady, nor would I expect them to. I have given them appropriate orders," he added.
"Well, I suppose you know your business, then,"
she said dismissively. Suppressing a flash of irritation over her manner, Rondal sent a scout ahead and led the carts down the road, his troopers fanning out to cover the flanks. A rearguard of three stood ready with bows, and the drovers each carried arbalest and sword. They were raiding a pantry, after all, not storming a castle.
"Let us hope I do know my business. I'm going forth to confer with the van. Please stay near to the carts." "I can quite take care of myself, thank you,"
she said indignantly. "I wasn't asking you to do that so that they could protect you. I asked you to do that so that you could protect them. You should ready your weapon." He knew with fair certainty that there wasn't a goblin in a mile, probably two. He'd scried the route ahead while they'd waited, and it was clear to his determination. But he enjoyed the anxious look that immediately haunted Arcella's face. He knew it was petty, beneath the dignity of a knight and unworthy of his pursuit of chivalry. He didn't care. The day was turning warm, quickly. The Gilmoran sun was famous for its intensity and brightness, even in autumn, and it didn't take long for his helmet to start catching the heat. He knew there was even a temple to the old imperial sun god, Reyes, at Signy Town, which sheltered the victims of sunstroke from the cotton fields. His steel helmet quickly became hot to the touch. Despite his better judgment, he removed it and tied it to his saddle horn, donning his apprentice cap instead. Other than the heat, it was a pretty day. There was just enough cloud to obscure the sun every so often, and the breeze from the north kept the sweat to a minimum. The crickets chirped all morning, and when they came to the swampy thickets that dotted this part of the Riverlands, they were joined by deep-throated bullfrogs and whining oyags.
"Not so much as a doe or a hen scratching,"
Fursar, the southern ranger, noted when Rondal checked with him.
"I've ranged almost a half mile out. Nothing larger than a dog hiding out."
"There are plenty of rats," Rondal observed as they came to the ruins of Maramore village, where a few of the vermin were slinking around the edges of the sunken holes that used to be homes. "I hear the Gavanni like a good rat when they can't find better."
"I suppose a man might do the same,"
the veteran noted dispassionately.
"Why bring her, my lord?"
he asked casually. "To keep an eye on her more than anything else," Rondal confided quietly. "She's been awfully moody lately. Jumpy. I want her where I can see her."
"She's not so fond of you anymore, I noticed."
"I hadn't. I've been running a military expedition and don't have time for such frivolities."
"Glad to hear it, my lord, but..."
"Yes?"
"Begging your pardon, my lord, but is it wise to have a woman with an arbalest and a poor disposition toward you riding behind you? Is she preserve you from such a fate, but..."
"She is fickle," Rondal agreed. He wasn't sure if he was speaking of the goddess of love or the troublesome noblewoman, but the man had a point. He halted until the column passed him. Lady Arcella gave him a cool glance and proudly let her mantle fall away in the heat just as she rode by. Rondal fell in with the rearguard until they came within a few hundred feet of the crossroads, then rode ahead to scout the other directions himself. He rejoined the Wains for a few moments as they rode through the next village.
"I trust there are no goblins about, Sir Rondal?"
she asked, almost accusingly. "Not yet, milady, but they do enjoy surprises."
"I'm getting thirsty,"
she complained as she fanned her face. "We should stop at the next well and cool the horses." "No, we will push on to the manor as planned." She snorted.
"You seem awfully sure of yourself, Sir Rondal."
"When it comes to giving orders to my men, I am. Stopping would put us at risk, or at least make concealing our presence difficult. If you're thirsty, drink from your water bottle."
"I don't have a water bottle,"
she said, sounding accusing again, like it was his fault.
"That was very short-sighted of you,"
he snickered. He waited, but continued riding alongside her in silence.
"Well?"
she asked expectantly.
"Well, what, milady?
Aren't you going to offer me your water bottle, Sir Rondal? It would be the courteous thing to do,"
she reproved. "Milady, your own father was a knight," he reminded her. "Do you know of chivalry?"
"Of course,"
she snorted prettily, tossing her head.
Then you should know that true chivalry must spring from a place of strength. Part of that strength in a man lies in his foresight and preparation. It was reasonable to expect to get thirsty on a hot day in Gilmora. It was therefore reasonable to pack a water bottle. She looked away, embarrassed, then looked back even more annoyed.
You must forgive me, as I am unused to the needs of the open road. I lack the knowledge and wisdom of an experienced campaigner such as yourself, Sir Knight.
He stared at her. You've never been thirsty before.
She glared back. I just think it is rude of you to have not offered me your water.
And I think it rude for you to presume that I am obligated to.
You are not a very honourable knight.
On the contrary, Rondal chuckled, as she got more upset with him. I am a very honourable knight. Chivalry is born of strength. The windfall harvested when a warrior chooses honourable service to an ideal, rather than use his might to bully and do violence maliciously.
And depriving a thirsty maiden of water is not malicious?
She demanded. It is not dishonourable, he countered, for chivalry must be employed by grace, not obligation, or a knight is a mere soldier to be ordered and commanded.
So, you're saying that by not giving me water you're being more chivalrous?
She asked scornfully. I'm saying that denying you the consequences of your ill-reasoned actions would be unfair to your instruction, and therefore it would be dishonourable of me to facilitate such a thing. If you do not learn to pack water when you leave camp, then you will be a burden on your mates. That's a valuable lesson to learn.
Fine, she said with a sneer. I will suffer, then, until we make the manor. I hope you enjoy my anguish.
No more than you enjoyed mine, he said, the first hint of speaking of her lack of attention since Tyndall had been around.
What do you mean?
She demanded. Contemplate it, he suggested. Perhaps something will come to you. I ride ahead to scout again. Keep your wits about you, though. We could be ambushed at any moment. When you enter your destination and when you leave are the two best times to be attacked. She frowned, but looked around anxiously again while he rode ahead.
Are you trying to get that one in a lather, my lord? Asked Fursar, when he approached the man at point. I could hear her all the way up here.
She forgot her water bottle, Rondal said. Now she's complaining about it.
So you do want her round, Fursar said, contemplatively.
I suppose I do,
he admitted, feeling a little guilty.
She has, forget I spoke, he sighed.
Oh, I have eyes, my lord. The ranger chuckled. You had her favour until Sir Tyndall arrived, and then she only had eyes for him.
That's not untrue, he said, quietly choking out the words from between clenched teeth.
Don't let it worry you none, Fursar dismissed. A doe like that is bound to follow after the biggest carrot in the sack, if you take my meaning, my lord.
I'm used to Sir Tyndall getting attention, he explained, some tension in his voice, but also some resignation.
If she would prefer to keep his company, that is her business. I'm here on a military mission, not to pay court to some country knight's daughter.
Aye, my lord, Fursar grunted. I am utterly convinced, and acting like you don't care about her now is sure to drive her mad, or at least that has been my experience. We're only a few miles away from the manor now. Perhaps you'd want to scout the village ahead?
He asked expectantly.
You know, I think I would, Rondal said as he blushed. He suddenly found that he did want solitude. He nudged his mount ahead and was musing darkly on the mysteries of femininity when something caught his attention. He drew a war wand and rode forward, cautiously scanning every corner of the darkened and abandoned village as he prepared to scry it more thoroughly. He was just bringing the spell into play when his eyes caught something moving, and moving with deliberate purpose. He didn't hesitate. He let his arm follow his eye as he screamed the command word, and a powerful bolt of magical plasma shot forth from the wand on a path of his desire. The shot was true, sending a furry black shape cartwheeling into the road, its limbs aflame. Even as the goblin shrieked in pain and rolled across the road, the hum of a bowstring jerked Rondal's head around and kept him from having his nose pierced by a vicious-looking black dart. He pointed the wand again without looking, waiting for his eye to catch up, his mouth ready with the mnemonic. When he saw the Gavanni archer clearly, the wand spat again at his command, and the beastly little warrior squealed and burst into flame as it caught the bolt in the chest.
Gavanni!
he shouted over his shoulder, finally getting around to completing his scrying spell. As his vision grew to encompass the region in his mind, he saw a third form appear. Gavanni were distinctive from humans when scrying in combat, and the little bugger shone like a candle in a darkened temple. There was one. "Over there!" he directed, as Fursar's horse skidded to a halt nearby. Quick as lightning, the man turned, knocked an arrow, and his bowstring snapped. A second arrow followed the first, and both hit home. A squeal and a moan told the tale.
"Is that all, my lord?" asked the ranger anxiously.
"At the moment," Rondal assured him, nervously, as he re-scried to be certain. "But if they were scouts, you can wager there are more around. Get everyone moving toward that manor, fast," he ordered as he looked around, scanning the rest of the horizon. The shouts went down the line and the rumble of the carts picked up in pitch as they increased their speed. "I told you leaving and entering was the best place to get ambushed," Rondal said as Arcella passed by him. "Keep your eyes open, I might have missed one." She looked appalled at the smouldering corpse her horse stepped around, and then looked afraid, trying to look at everywhere at once. Faroon Hall was just as they had left it, Rondal was gratified to see. After dismantling the spell binding on the gate, the carts went through, and he resealed it behind them. The laborious process of loading them began, as the men spread out and began systematically foraging. Rondal threw some cursory wards up to alert him of any further goblins, and posted one man as lookout, before helping the others load the grain and other foodstuffs. Arcella made a point to draw water from the well and drink it thirstily and noisily, shooting him dark looks between draughts. Rondal rolled his eyes. "Find an empty water bottle for the way back," he advised. She glared at him even more. As the men made a more careful exploration of the abandoned manor, they discovered two other storerooms with provisions that had been overlooked. That was as good as a supply convoy arriving, in Rondal's estimation. He was in charge of feeding everyone now, and finding a smokehouse full of hams and bacon was like finding gold. The 20 sacks of wheat they discovered could feed them for months. Even after packing 3 carts full, there was still an abundance left. Rondal had the carts leave with 2 horse escorts, one after the other, rather than go in a large group and risk all of them not making it back to Maramore. Arcella did not like that plan, but he did not bother to answer her objections. He detailed himself out to leave with the last cart, and ordered Arcella to do likewise. He gave her some credit. After complaining for the first few minutes, she pitched in and helped carry and sort and stack the supplies, despite her noble lineage and generally irritable demeanor. She knew how to work, at least. Rondal knew plenty of common girls who had a hard time with that. He was loading up the last few sundries by late afternoon when he got the call.
"Run!" Tyndall called to him, mind to mind. The tone was frantic.
"What is it?"
"We're under attack," he said excitedly. "We got too close to one of their encampments and one of the sentries got wind of us. Well, let's just say we're riding for our lives and we have about 100 goblins pursuing us."
"That's not good," Rondal said uneasily.
"Tyndall, what the hells have you done?"
"We're heading down the south road toward Danharp, but I don't know what's there. I don't want to lead them back to Maramore, but we have to go somewhere."
"I understand," Rondal said.
"Bide." He sounded calm, but his mind was racing. This was his responsibility. He was in charge of Tyndall and the other men in his command. 100 goblins was nothing to take lightly either, and Tyndall was right. They didn't need to lead them back to Maramore. A company of goblins was more than their feeble defences could manage. That was the nature of the problem. Separating Tyndall and his insurgent allies from the goblins, and then making the goblins go away. Rondal had precious little at his disposal in terms of resources, though, and what he did have was vulnerable. But then he remembered a war college lecture on the importance of geography in battle, and realized that he had, perhaps, more resources than he'd thought.
"Tell me where you are, exactly," he began, when he resumed contact.
"I'm in the saddle, dodging arrows. Ishi's tits, that was close."
"How are they keeping up?" Rondal asked, mystified.
"You know those dog-cart chariots they used last summer? Well, the puppies grew up big enough to allow a small goblin to ride it, and while they are terrible shots while mounted, they seem to have grasped the basic idea of cavalry."
"Dog cavalry? Calling them dogs is a kindness," Tyndall assured him.
These things may have started out as dogs, but they aren't the typical hound anymore. Dread hounds is more like. Fell hounds, maybe. They nip at the horse's heels and chase us in bursts. I've killed three or four myself, but there's a whole howling pack on our tail.
When I asked where you were, Rondell said patiently, I meant where were you located?
Huh? Oh, we're getting close to that big crossroads.
You are? Good. Instead of continuing south, go west, then go south on the next major crossroad. It will be a half mile down the road.
Why?
Because that will lead you toward me, he explained, and I can get ready for them.
With what? You don't have but a few men with you. You are on a supply mission, remember?
I have what I need, Rondell assured him. You just stay alive, stay ahead of them, and be prepared to do what I tell you.
You're the commander,
Tyndall conceded.
Just get us out of here.
I'm working on it, Rondell said, and cut contact.
My lord, asked the ranger when he opened his eyes.
Change in plans, Rondell said abruptly. Tell the last cart to push fast and catch up with the second cart, because we'll need the guards. I want them in that tower, he said, waving toward their refuge. Tell them to get inside and close it up. You and I will be taking a little trip down the road.
Aye, my lord, he agreed, and bustled off to give orders.
What about me?
Asked Arcella in an almost demanding tone.
You stay here in the tower, he ordered. We'll be back soon enough.
I most certainly will not, she bristled. Escort me back to Madamore at once.
I don't have time to argue, Rondell said, almost to himself.
As far as I am concerned, you're a combatant now. Find some more quarrels, climb up those stairs to the top of the tower and make yourself cozy. If you see a goblin, shoot it. Other than that, stay out of our way.
Sir Rondell,
she almost shrieked when he turned to prepare his mission.
I insist you take me back to Madamore.
And I insist you stop acting like a spoiled child, he said evenly. We are in the middle of a war zone, and you are imperiling our mission. You can try to catch up with the cart on your own, or you can stay here, shut up, and be a good soldier. Which is it? She grimaced.
I'll stay,
she said finally.
I'm enchanted,
he said, rolling his eyes. Now leave me alone. I have work to do.